The shards had looked real enough to make him react. He folds his hands behind him, then regards me. Better. He walks toward me again. Wherever he steps, the black lines on the ground creep upward, turn into skeletal hands, and try to grab at his legs. I drink in the exhilaration of it all. The millions of threads glistening before me, ready for my command. Weave the threads together, Enzo commands as he draws closer. Flames appear behind him. I pull myself to my feet and step away from him until my back touches the cavern wall. Go ahead. Make something for me that is more than a dark silhouette. Make something with color. Still drowning in my fury and fear, I take the threads I see and cross them, painting what appears in my mind. And just like that, slowly, painfully, a new creation emerges before me. Enzo has almost reached me. Between us, I paint something red. So crimson red that the color of it blinds me. The red changes into petals, each one layered on top of the other, covered in dark dewdrops. Beneath it, spiral green stems covered in thorns. Enzo stops before the hovering illusion. He observes it for a moment, then reaches out to touch it. I pull on strings in the air. Blood blooms on his gloves, dripping from his palms to the ground, mimicking my own real blood on my injured palm. Reminding me of the day when I'd closed my hand around the rose thorns in my father's garden. I am learning imitation from reality. Enzo steps forward. He passes through the rose illusion, then stops a foot away from me. The blood disappears from his gloves. I glare at him defiantly. I keep my heart wide open, relishing the flood of dark emotions that fill me to the brim. The heat of his fire turns my cheeks red. Enzo nods once. Very good, he murmurs. For the first time, he looks impressed. I am ready, I reply angrily. To my dismay, my tears are still wet on my face. I'm not afraid of you, and if you give me a chance, I can show you what I'm capable of. Enzo simply watches me. I search his eyes, seeing once again the odd expression lurking behind his cold features, something that goes beyond his desire to exploit my power. Something that almost looks like familiarity. We gaze at each other for a long moment. Finally, he reaches up and gently wipes away one of my tears. Don't cry, he says, his voice firm. You are stronger than that. When the world was young, the gods and goddesses birthed the angels. Joy and greed, beauty and empathy and sorrow, fear and fury, sparks of humanity. To feel emotion, therefore, is to be human, is to be a child of the gods. The birth of the angels. Various authors. Adelina Amuteru. The storm finally passes, leaving a devastated estancia in its path. Broken roof shingles, flooded temples, wrecked ships, the dead and dying. As people flock to the temples, others gather in estancia's squares. Terran leads the largest of these gatherings. I can see it all the way from the Fortunata Court's balconies. We let a Malfetto win the qualifying races, he calls out. And look at how the gods have punished us. They are angry with the abominations that we allow to walk among us. People listen in grim silence. Others start to shout along, raising their fists in response. Behind Terran are three young Malfettos, one of them barely out of childhood. Probably dug them out of the city's ghettos. They are tied together to a stake erected in the center of the square, and their mouths are gagged. Their feet are hidden in the midst of a pile of wood. A pair of priests flank them, lending their silent approval. Terran lifts the torch in his hands. The firelight casts an orange hue across his pale irises. These Malfettos are accused of being elites. For being among those that attacked Inquisitors during the races. The Inquisition has found them guilty. It is our duty to send them back to the underworld, to keep our city safe.
He throws the torch onto the pile of wood. The Malfettos disappear, screaming, behind curtains of fire.
From this day on,
Taryn calls out above the sound of the flames,
all Malfetto families and shops will pay a double tax to the crown, as reparations for the bad fortune they bring upon our society. Refusal will be seen as reasonable cause for suspicion of working with the young elites. Offenders will be detained immediately.
I can't see the daggers from here, but I know they are watching the burning from the roofs. I know that right now Dante is notching arrows to his bow, getting ready to put each of the Malfettos out of their misery. I try not to dwell on why they don't risk saving them. The next day, an angry mob tears down a Malfetto family's shop. Broken glass litters the streets. My lessons speed up. Enzo takes me under his tutelage, coming to the court late at night or early in the morning. Not until Gemma whispers it to me do I learn that Enzo has never trained anyone like this before. Her words are meant to be encouraging, but all I can do is lie awake at night, dreading the moment when I will have to see Taryn again. To hone my illusion skills, Enzo calls on Mikkel, the architect.
Ridiculous,
Mikkel says during our first session together. He brings the painter's eye, and his painter's eye critiques my work.
You call this a rose? The shadows are all wrong. The petals are too thick and the texture's too harsh. Where's the essence, the delicate touch of life?
Mikkel forces me to create small illusions, as tiny as I can. This helps focus my concentration without draining my energy, requiring me to pay attention to everything on a minute scale, on details that I normally do not consider. I learn to make illusions of tiny flowers, keys, feathers, the texture of a wood splinter, the wrinkles of a skin on a finger's joints. He reminds me that when I want to imitate a real object, I need to think like a painter. A smooth stone is not smooth at all, but covered in tiny imperfections. White is not white, but a dozen different shades of yellows, purples, grays, blues. Skin color changes depending on what light shines on it. A face is never entirely still, but made up of tiny, endless flickers of movement we never think twice about. Faces are the hardest. The slightest mistake and the face looks unnatural, eerie, and false. Conjuring the spark of life in a person's eyes is nearly impossible. Mikkel's words echo Raphael's. I learn to see. I start to notice all the things that weren't there before. With this comes another thought. If I can master my powers, perhaps I can face Taryn next time with something other than traitorous information. Perhaps next time I can actually attack him. The thought spurs me on with feverish intensity. I spend every waking minute practicing. Sometimes I practice alone, and other times I'll watch as Enzo spars with Lucent and Dante. Occasionally, Gemma takes me aside, working with me while the others duel. Gemma is the one who teaches me how to still my mind in order to better sense the minds of those around me.
Why don't you duel with them? I ask her.
Today she has a cat with her, a huge feral one with a low growl. Gemma grins at me, then looks down at the cat. It untangles itself from her legs and comes ambling over to me. I shrink away from its wild face, but it rubs its head against my leg and settles at my feet.
I'm no fighter, Gemma replies, folding her arms. Father thinks I have beautiful hands, and he doesn't want me to ruin them once I find myself a proper suitor.
She holds up her hands for emphasis, and sure enough, they are indeed fine and delicate. I'd forgotten for a moment that Gemma, unlike Lucent and the ex-soldier Dante, is a proper-born lady. The only thing that had spared her the Inquisition's wrath after the horse race incident. I also feel a rush of jealousy that her family seems perfectly kind and encouraging. It had never occurred to me that some might actually love their Malfetto children.
The cat wound around my legs, hisses at me before returning to Gemma.
Stupid creature, I think grudgingly. I look at Gemma. Why do you always have different animals with you?
They follow me. Sometimes I have an easier time bonding to certain animals, to the point where I'll do it accidentally. This fellow tailed me all the way from my father's villa.
She scratches the animal's head fondly, and it purrs back.
He won't stay forever, but I'll enjoy his company in the meantime.
I turn my attention back to the dueling. We watch the fight for a while until Gemma clears her throat and I look back down at her again. This time, her carefree expression has given way to something more serious.
I never properly thanked you for what you did in the racing square, she says. That was reckless and brave and breathtaking. My father and I are both grateful.
Her father must be a patron of the daggers, the way she talks about him. Her kind words stir warmth in me, and I find myself returning her smile. The darkness in me fades for a moment.
Glad to help, I reply. You seemed a bit unhappy out there.
Gemma wrinkles her nose.
Not my best moment.
Then she laughs.
It is a bright, ringing sound, the laugh of someone who is loved. In spite of everything, I can't help laughing with her.
You've grown rather fond of Gemma, Raffaella tells me the next day, as we walk together in the underground catacombs. Today his hair is tied high on his head in an elegant dark knot, exposing his slender neck. He wears a bold blue robe trimmed in silver. I can only see the part of him illuminated by lantern light. And the sight unnerves me, making me feel like the darkness is trying to swallow us whole. She's easy to like, I say after a while. I don't like admitting it. I shouldn't be getting close to any of the daggers at all. Raffaella turns to give me a brief smile, then looks away again.
The tunnels branch once more here. Do you see?
He pauses to hold up the lantern, and in the gloom, I see the path before us split into two, the walls lined with endless rows of urns. Raffaella chooses the right-hand path.
We now walk underneath the piazza of 12 deities, the city's largest marketplace. If you listen close, you can hear some of the bustle. It's a shallow spot.
We both pause to listen, and sure enough, eventually I make out the faint sounds of people hawking their goods. Stockings and sweets, dental powders and bags of honey-roasted nuts. I nod. All my recent time with Raffaella has been spent learning the catacombs. It turns out that the main underground cavern is connected to a wider maze of tunnels, much wider. We continue walking, memorizing one branch after the next. A honeycomb of quiet paths that run parallel to the bustling surface world. I watch the frescoes on the walls shift with the ages. The walls feel like they're closing in on me, ready to entomb me with the ashes of past generations. Without Raffaella's help, I know with absolute certainty that I would die down here, lost in the maze. This path leads to a hidden door under the temples, Raffaella says as we pass another branch. The opposite path will take you to Enzo's northern villa. He nods to the dark tunnel up ahead. There was even a path that used to run under the Inquisition Tower, although it has been sealed for many decades. I fall silent at the mention of the tower. Raffaella notices my discomfort. We walk in the darkness for a long time without saying anything. Finally, we stop before a dead end. Raffaella runs his fingers delicately along the edge of the wall. He finds a small groove in the stone and then gives it a good push. The wall swings slowly to one side and light streams in. I squint.
And this, Raffaella says, taking my hand, is my favorite path.
We step through the open wall and find ourselves standing at the entrance of a tunnel. The ancient stone steps sinking straight into the water of the canals. A quiet, hidden spot that looks out over the main harbor and the beginning of the Sun Sea. Distant gondolas glide by on golden water.
Oh, I breathe. For an instant, I forget my troubles. It's beautiful.
Raffaele sits on a step right above the water, and I follow his lead. For a while, we say nothing, listening instead to the water lapping gently against the stone.
Do you come here often? I ask him after a while.
He nods. His multicolored eyes focus on a faraway pier where the hazy silhouette of the palace rises. Light outlines his long lashes. On quiet days, it helps me think. We sit in comfortable silence. Off in the distance, the songs of gondoliers float toward us. I find myself humming along, the melody of my mother's lullaby coming instinctively to my lips. Raffaele watches me with his small smile, his eyes bright with interest.
You sing that often, he says after a moment.
The River Maiden's Lullaby. I know it. It's a lovely rhyme. I nod. My mother used to sing it to me when I was very little.
I like it when you sing. It calms your energy.
I pause, embarrassed. He must be able to sense my heightened sense of unease for the past few days, as my next appointment with Taryn draws near. I'm not very good. I don't have her voice. I almost tell him about my sister, how Violetta's voice sounds closer to my mother's, but then I remember where my sister is right now. I swallow the words.
Raffaele doesn't comment on my energy this time. Maybe he thinks the thought of my mother saddens me.
Can you sing it for me? I ask him to distract myself. I've never heard you before. He tilts his head at me in the way that makes me blush. My alignment to passion stirs. His eyes go back to the water. He hums a little, then sings the first few verses of the lullaby. My lips part at the sound of his voice. The sweetness of the melody, the way the lyrics hang in the air, light and clear and full of longing. When I sing it, the song comes out as individual notes. But when he sings, the notes change to music. I can hear my mother in the words. A memory comes back to me of a warm afternoon and our sun-drenched garden, when my mother danced with me to the lullaby. When she caught me, I turned around to hug her and buried myself in her dress.
Mama, Mama, I called up to her. Will you be very sad when I grow up?
My mother bent down and touched my face. Her cheeks were wet.
Yes, my darling, she answered. I will be very sad.
The melody ends and Raffaele lets the last note disappear in the air. He glances at me. I realize that tears are blurring my vision and reach up to hurriedly wipe them away.
Thank you, I murmur.
You're welcome. He smiles back, and there is genuine affection in his expression. For a moment, I sense something I've never sensed outside of the Dagger Society. Something I'm finding only now, surrounded by young strangers that remind me of myself. Kindness, with no strings attached. I can see a life for me here as one of them. It's a very, very dangerous way to think. How can I be their friend with what I'm doing? The closer I get, the harder it will be the next time Taryn expects me to deliver what I've promised him. But the longer he stays away and the stronger I get, the bolder I grow. I return to watching the scenery with Raffaele, but my mind spins. I need to find a way out. To find Violetta without giving Taryn his information. And the only way is to work up the courage to tell the Daggers the truth. Raffaele's sessions with me evoke gentle passion, but nothing I do with anyone comes close to my training sessions with Enzo himself. Enzo pushes my emotions hard. He teaches me how to create a convincing illusion of fire, how a flame flickers, how the color of it changes from red to gold to blue to white. I weave and weave until I exhaust myself. Your strikes are unfocused, he snaps one night as he teaches me the basics of sparring with a wooden sword. Concentrate. Our clashes echo in the empty cavern. He knocks the weapon out of my hand with one effortless blow, then kicks it up in the air and flings it back at me.
I scramble to catch it, but my weak vision means I miss it by a good several inches. The wood hits my wrist. I wince. At this hour, all I want to do is go to bed.
My apologies, Your Highness, I retort, ignoring the pain.
Curse him to the underworld. He always attacks on my blind side. I know he tries to anger me on purpose to strengthen my power, but I don't care.
I'm a merchant's daughter. I haven't exactly trained for dueling.
You're not dueling. You're learning basic defense. Young elites have enemies.
Enzo points his sword at me.
Again.
I strike. I conjure a dark silhouette of a wolf and fling it at him, hoping to throw him off. It doesn't. He dodges my blow with ease, then lunges back, clashing with me twice until we're close to the cavern's wall. He whirls and yanks a dagger straight out of his boot. The second blade stops a hair's breadth from my neck. My fury heightens. What's the point of pitting a lamb against an expert assassin? I conjure an illusion of smoke that explodes around us. Then I do a move he taught me. I grab his dagger and aim for his throat. His hand clamps hard on my wrist before I can make contact. Heat rushes through me. Something sharp taps against my chest. When I look down, I see a sword point hovering over my ribs.
Don't forget one weapon just because of another, he says. A flicker of approval flashes in his eyes. Or you'll find yourself skewered in no time.
Then maybe you should know which weapons are real, I reply. The dagger I'm holding near his throat vanishes in a puff of smoke. The real dagger I'd taken from him is in my other hand, which now I press against his side.
Enzo studies me with a thoughtful expression. Then he smiles. A genuine smile, full of surprise and amusement. It warms his entire face. My fear is abruptly replaced by joy, the satisfaction of finally pleasing him. He carefully drops the wooden sword, pushes my hand away from his side, and fixes my grip on the dagger's handle. Heat rushes through me. His chest presses against my shoulder and side. His gloved hand covers mine. A surge of passion cuts through my darkness, and the color of the smoke around us changes from black to red.
Like this, he murmurs, molding my hand into the correct grip. He says nothing about the shifting color of the smoke. I stay silent and do as he says. The warmth trickling from his fingers to mine feels as delicious as hot water over an aching body.
Create a dagger again, he whispers. I want a good look at it.
With my anger still churning and his touch sending shivers through me, I gather my concentration. The pull is easier now. Before our eyes, the outline of a dagger appears. It wavers and shimmers, not quite whole, and then I fill it with details, painting in the crimson handle, the grooves on the hilt, the smooth shine of the blade, and the blood channel that cuts down its center, solidifying it. The blade's edge sharpens to a severe point. I rotate it in midair until the point faces us. There's hardly a difference between the illusion and the reality. I look to my side to see Enzo's gaze fixated on the false dagger. His heart beats through the fabric of his robes, rhythmic against my skin.
Beautiful, he murmurs. Somehow, I think I hear two meanings behind the word.
He releases me, then sheathes his dagger with one flourish. The smile is gone.
Enough for today, he says.
He doesn't bother meeting my gaze, but his voice is different now. Softer.
We'll continue tomorrow.
A sudden impulse hits me. Taryn's face swims in my thoughts, then shifts to a vision of my sister. I don't know where this impulse comes from, whether it's my alignments with passion or ambition, but I reach out to him with my energy before I can stop myself. Enzo pauses, then glances back at me with a raised eyebrow.
Yes? He says simply. Silence.
All of my pent-up tension from the past 2 weeks now comes to a head, and I find myself struggling to get the words out.
Tell him. This is your chance.
Tell him the truth. Enzo watches me with a patient, piercing look. The words are right there,
right on the tip of my tongue. The Inquisition has forced me to spy on you. Master Terran Santoro is holding my sister hostage. You have to help me. And then, as I stare into Enzo's eyes, I remember the heat of his power. I try again to speak. Again the words halt. Finally, I manage to say something, but what comes out is, "When do I go on a mission?" Enzo narrows his eyes at that. He takes several slow steps forward until we are separated by a couple of feet. My heart beats furiously. I'm a fool. Why did I say that? "If you are to ask," Enzo replies, "then you're not ready." The moment is lost. The truth that had sat so closely on my lips now shrinks away again, buried underneath my fears. My cheeks burn with shame. "I'd think you'd want me to come," I manage to finish. "Why would I want you with me on a mission, little wolf?" he says quietly. A surge of my passion courses through me, cutting through the tension warring inside my chest. "Because I impress you," I reply. Enzo stays quiet, then one of his gloved hands touches my chin, tilting it up gently while the other rests against the stone wall beside my head. I tremble in his grasp. What is this strange light in his eyes? He looks at me like he has known me before. I fight my urge to cover up the hideous, scarred side of my face. "Is that so?" he whispers back. He leans closer, so close that his lips now hover right over mine, suspended in space before a kiss, taunting me. Perhaps he's testing me again. If I move at all, we will touch. Heat rushes through me from his hand, flooding every vein in my body and filling my lungs with fire. My energy roars in my ears. I am in the middle of the ocean, buffeted on all sides by hot currents. At the same time, I feel a rush of something new, something I've only felt a hint of during my first test with the daggers. The part of me that responded to the Rosite gem, to passion and desire, awakens now. The energy from it rushes up into my chest, threatening to burst out of my skin, making my grasp on my powers unstable. Random illusions appear around us, flashes of forest and night and dark ocean. I'm grateful for the wall behind me. If I didn't have that to lean against, I'm sure I would crumple to my knees. "Is there something I need to know?" I imagine Enzo asking, and for a moment, I'm so convinced he says this aloud that I nearly confess everything. Then Enzo steps away. The heat running through me dissipates as he pulls his energy back, leaving me cold and aching. My illusions vanish. For the first time since I've known him, he's not the cool, confident, deadly Reaper. There's a flicker of vulnerability in him, even guilt. I stare back with the same confusion. My cheeks are still hot. What happened between us? He's the leader of the Dagger Society, the Crown Prince, a notorious killer, the potential future king. And yet I've somehow managed to unsettle him. He hasn't settled me. The unspoken secret sits heavily between us, a dark abyss. Then his moment of vulnerability fades, and he resumes the aloofness that I'm so familiar with. "We will see about your missions," he says, as if nothing happened. Maybe nothing has. Perhaps our little moment has been nothing more than an illusion I accidentally conjured, like everything else that popped up around us. Like my father's ghost. My shoulders sag at the close call. I say nothing in return. Perhaps I've narrowly avoided certain death. Enzo gives me a courteous nod, then turns his back and exits the cavern, leaving me alone with my pounding heart. When I look to my side, I notice that the wall where he had rested his hand is now blackened and charred with his handprint.
Raffaele Laurent Bassette. Any changes in opinion about her? Enzo asks in a low voice. Raffaele turns away from the prince. Today they both stand at the entrance of the caverns, looking on as several of the daggers train. Both of their gazes are focused on the same thing. Adelina, who sits in a corner with Mikkel and practices weaving threads of her energy into small, familiar objects. A golden ring, a knife, a piece of lace. With each gesture, Raffaele feels her energy shift. Watching her learn to create illusions reminds him of the energy he feels when he watches Mikkel at work, trying to imitate life. As she goes, Mikkel critiques her work with a string of half-hearted insults, but Raffaele can tell that the young painter is impressed with her. Nearby, Lucent stops training now and then to shout out challenges for Adelina. Make a gold talent! Make a bird! Make a statue! Adelina obliges, her illusions growing in complexity. Lucent nods in admiration. Adelina was right, Raffaele finally replies, noting the growing friendships. Perhaps he had misjudged her in the beginning. I was training her too slowly for her to work with her powers. Enzo nods once in agreement. She's learning at a pace I've never seen. The words make Raffaele uneasy. He thinks back to the way she reacted to the amber and nightstone, how he warned Enzo that night to get rid of her. He thinks of the alarming shifts in her darkness lately, how the new speed of her training is affecting her energy, how frequently she seems anxious, scared, and alone. The emotions seep from her. Something about Adelina. There is a frailty underneath the dark shell she has started to build around herself. A small remaining light. A light that wavers precariously from day to day. There's a reason I trained her too slowly, you know, Raffaele says after a moment. Enzo looks at him. You were holding her back on purpose. I was holding her back to protect us. Raffaele chooses his next words carefully. It's true. She may become the most powerful of us all. She can already create illusions that trick the eyes and ears. Eventually, she'll realize that she can also trick one's taste, smell, and touch. He casts Enzo a sideways glance. You know what that means, don't you? She will be able to fool a thirsty man into drinking liquid metal. She will be able to make someone feel pain that isn't there. Raffaele shivers at the possibilities. Make sure the control she learns doesn't eclipse her loyalties to you. Adelina may have aligned the strongest with fear and hatred, but she also aligned with passion and ambition. The combination drives her to recklessness, makes her unreliable and hungry for power. Enzo looks on as Adelina slowly conjures a detailed illusion of a wolf. So realistic, it looks as if the animal were really standing there on the cavern floor. Mikkel claps his hands in approval. She will be magnificent, he replies. This time, Raffaele feels Enzo's energy shift at the mention of Adelina. Flickers of an emotion not usually associated with the Reaper. Not for years. Something happened between them, he realizes. Something dangerous. She's not Daphne, Raffaele reminds him gently. Enzo looks at him. And in that moment, Raffaele feels a pang of deep sympathy for the young prince. A memory comes back to him of the afternoon when he'd accompanied Enzo to the apothecary to see the shop's young assistant, when he'd witnessed Enzo's proposal. Even though quiet rain fell outside the shop, the sun still shone through, painting the world in a glittering haze of light. Daphne had laughed at the affection in Enzo's eyes, teased the gentleness in his voice, and he'd laughed with her. Raffaele had glimpsed her touching Enzo's cheek and pulling him close. Marry me, Enzo had said to her. She'd kissed him in reply. After she died, Raffaele never again sensed that emotion in Enzo's heart. Until now. Finally, Enzo nods a brief farewell and turns to leave. Prepare her, he tells Raffaele before he goes. She's coming with us to the Spring Moons.
I joined the Spring Moon's festivities for the first time, and it was as if I had come into a strange land. The people have transformed into visions of fairies and ghouls. I cannot decide if I want to stay or leave. Letter from Amendar of Orange to his sister on his second voyage to Estenzia. Adelina Amuteru. There was a time during my childhood, a brief time, when my father was kind to me. I dream of it tonight. I am 13. My father wakes up in a cheery mood, then comes to my bedchambers and pulls my curtains open to let the light in. I watch him warily, uncertain what has brought about this sudden change. Did Violeta say something to him? Get dressed, Adelina, he says, smiling at me. Today I am taking you to the port with me. Then he leaves, humming to himself. My heart lurches in excitement. Can this be happening? Father always takes Violeta to the ports to watch the ships and buy her presents. I have always stayed home. I sit in bed for a moment longer, still unsure, and then I hop to the floor and rush to my dresser. I choose my favorite outfit, a blue and cream Tamoran silk dress, and tie two long strips of blue cloth around my hair, securing it high behind my head. Maybe Violeta is coming with us, I thought. I skip out of my room to hers, expecting her to be ready too. Violeta is still in bed. When I tell her where we're going, she looks surprised, then worried. Be careful, she says. But I'm so happy that I just sneer at her. She seems kind here, but that is only because she's jealous that she isn't coming. I turn away. Violeta's warning fades from my thoughts. The day is wonderful, full of bright colors. My father takes me on a canal ride. He helps me out of the gondola. The port is bustling with people, merchants calling for their wares to be shipped to the appropriate addresses, shopkeepers standing behind their stands, calling out at curious passersby, children chasing after dogs. My father holds my hand. I hurry alongside him, laughing at his jokes, smiling when I know I should smile. Deep inside, I am frightened. This is not normal. My father buys each of us a bowl of sweet ice flavored with milk and honey, and together we sit to watch the woodmen and caulkers work on a new ship. He chats animatedly, telling me how strict Estenzia is about the quality of her ships, how every rope and sail and bobbin is tagged with labels and colors identifying the craftsmen responsible. I don't understand everything he says, but I don't dare interrupt him. I wait for him to turn violent. But today my father looks so carefree that I can't help but fall under the spell, letting myself believe entirely that he's finally happy with me. Maybe things will be different from now on. Maybe I had just been making mistakes up until now. Finally, when the sun begins making its way down the sky, we return to the gondolas and head for home. Adelina, he says as we sit together, swaying and creaking with the current. He takes his face in my hands. I know who you really are. You needn't be afraid. My smile stays on even though my heart wavers. What does he mean? Show me what you can do, Adelina. I know there must be something inside of you. I stare back in confused silence, my foolish smile still planted on my lips. When I don't answer, my father's gentle expression starts to fade. Go on, he coaxes. You needn't be afraid, child. His voice lowers. Show me that you are no ordinary malfetto. Go on. Slowly, I start to realize that he has been using kindness to coax my power out of me. Perhaps he's even made a wager with somebody already, somebody who would pay my father for me if I could demonstrate some strange ability. My smile trembles along with my heart. He has tried violence and failed to provoke a power in me. Now he wants to try affection? Be careful, Violeta had told me. Do you see what a fool I am? Still, I try. I want so badly to please him. The next day, we repeat the same routine. My father is curiously gentle and attentive, treating me as if he saw Violeta before him instead of me. Violeta says nothing more, and I'm relieved. I know what he wants from me, and I am so hungry to accept this false kindness that I try every day, as hard as I can, to conjure something to please my father. It never happens. Finally, weeks later, my father's good humor wanes. He takes my face into his hands one last time on that carriage ride home. He asks me to show him what I can do, and again, I fail. The carriage lurches along in an awkward, uncomfortable silence. After a while, my father's hands leave my face. He edges away from me, sighs, and looks out the window at the moving landscape. "Worthless," he mutters, his voice so quiet that I barely hear him. The next morning, I lie in bed and anticipate my father coming in again with a smile on his face. "Today is the day," I tell myself. This time, I am determined to please him, and his kindness will be able to coax something useful out of me. But he doesn't come. When I finally get out of bed and find him, he ignores me. He has given up his quest to find me useful. Violeta sees me in the hallway. The distance between us feels overwhelming. Her eyes are large and dark, pitying. Her face, as usual, is perfect. I look away from her in silence. My 2 weeks have come and gone. Throughout it all, I haven't found a single chance to visit Taryn at the Inquisition Tower. Maybe I've been avoiding it on purpose. I don't know. All I know is that my time is now up, and he will be expecting me. I know what will happen if I don't show my face soon, and tonight is my first official mission with the Daggers. Their plan for tonight, as far as I understand, goes something like this. The Spring Moons, Kenetra's annual celebration of the season, is made up of 3 nights of festivals and parties, 1 night in honor of each of our 3 moons. Each night, a huge masquerade ball will take place at the water's edge in Estensia's largest harbor. At midnight, 6 ships laden with fireworks will put on a dazzling display of lights over the water. But the Daggers are going to set fire to the ships before that can even happen, destroying the fleet in a spectacular explosion of fireworks. It will be a display of power, defiance against the king, to show his weakness. And I'm going to help them do it. The city is quickly turning into a powder keg, Raffaele explains to me as we head out from his chambers. Tonight he's a vision in green and gold robes, part of his face hidden behind an intricate gold half-mask, his cheekbones and brows dusted with glitter. If the king wants to burn us at the stake, then the Daggers are going to respond. He smiles at me. It is an expert expression. Secretive, shy, trained. The people are tired of a weak king. When Enzo seizes the throne, they will be ready for the change. I listen, distracted by my own thoughts. For a moment I fantasize about myself in such a position. Instead of being trapped by the whims of others, what would it be like to have others bowing to me, obeying my every command? What must it feel like to have that kind of power? It's the first time I've stepped out into Estensia at night. Soon, gondolas arrive on the canal that the court's street lines, and the court's consorts split into groups as we step into our individual boats. I join Raffaele and 2 others in the same boat, the seats creaking as I gently lower myself in. My movement sends ripples across the water. We pull away, gliding off to the harbor. I gape at the city. No nights are as lovely as the nights of the spring moons, and no city is as breathtaking as Estensia, which has transformed into a wonderland of light. Lanterns hang along all the bridges, their glow bouncing off the water's surface in waves of orange and gold. Gondolas drift through the waterways, and music and laughter ripple through the masked crowds that have gathered out in the warm evening air. Overhead, 3 moons hang large and luminous in a near-perfect triangle. Baleeras glide past them, their glittering translucent wings illuminated by moonlight.
This close view of them is a startling contrast to the faraway figures I'd seen when I first arrived in Estensia, and the sight of their long, ray-like bodies passing before the moons takes my breath away. Farther out at the harbor, the silhouettes of six ships with their fireworks sit on the water. Inquisitors, some on horseback and some on foot, patrol the bridges. They are the only ones not adorned with bright, glittering colors and sparkling masks, and their white and gold figures look harsh against the festivities. They are everywhere tonight, adding to a uniform tension in the air. I turn my face carefully away from them. "The city is a powder keg," Raffaella had said, "and we are going to light it tonight." By the time we arrive at the main harbor, the celebrations are in full swing. The statues of the angels and gods that line the square are all covered from head to toe in flowers. A few masked revelers, already drunk this early in the night, have climbed on top of the statues to wave at the cheering crowds. I inhale deeply, catching the scents of ocean, sweet and savory pastries, roasting pig and fish. Raffaele waits until the others have left our gondola. Then he steps gracefully out and offers me a hand. I join him on land. The other consorts eventually scatter, each of them joining clients waiting for them along the edge of the harbor. Raffaele guides me through a section of the crowd, then squeezes my hand once. "Go," he whispers. "Remember the paths back down to the catacombs if you lose yourself during the mission." Then he's gone, making his way through the crowd. For a beat, I'm all alone, lost among swirling colors. I look around. My heart pounds. I've grown so dependent on Raffaele's guidance that his absence always leaves me short of breath. A sudden hand on my waist makes me look to my side. It's Enzo. If I didn't know to meet him here, I wouldn't have recognized him tonight. His hair is covered beneath a mask that transforms him from a young prince into a forest fae with glittering horns twisting up over his head, the structure adorned with dangling silver strings that gleam in the light. All I can see of his face are his lips, and if I look past the shadows the mask casts, his eyes. Even through his disguise, I can sense him taking in my new appearance. My elaborate Tamoran head wrap and my gold reveler's silks, the glittering white porcelain hiding the scarred side of my face. His lips part slightly, ready to say something. Then he bows to me. "A lovely evening," he says. I return his smile as he kisses me gently on the cheek and offers his arm. I gasp at the brief flush of heat from the touch of his lips to my skin. He leads us through the throngs. He keeps a respectful distance between us, our only contact being my arm looped through his. But even so, I can feel the warmth radiating from his robes, a soft, pleasing feeling reaching for me. I force myself to stay calm. Through my mask, I focus on the silhouettes of ships at the harbor. We enter an area full of dancers. Here and there are other consorts, swirling with their clients and patrons and other onlookers in a sea of glitter, laughing uproariously as they move in time with the beat of drums and serenade of strings. I catch a glimpse of Raffaele with a richly dressed noblewoman on his arm, but neither he nor Enzo acknowledges each other. Inquisitors watch the scene from atop their steeds. Enzo gives me a sidelong glance. Then he pulls me closer and puts one hand on the small of my back. Around us, the world turns into a frenzy of cheering and bright colors. He smiles his warm, genuine smile. It's a lovely expression he so rarely makes as the Reaper. "Dance with me," he murmurs. "All part of our act, all part of the disguise." I tell myself this repeatedly, but it doesn't change the way I lean into his touch, how his words stir the longing in my chest. If he notices, he doesn't show it, but he does seem to stand closer than he needs to, and look at me with an intensity that I don't remember seeing before. We spin with the others in a large circle. More join in until we are a tightly packed whirl of bodies. The minutes fly by. Enzo's movements are flawless, and somehow I find myself moving in sync with him, my steps as accurate as his. Enzo releases me as we dance into the arms of new partners, then switch off again and again in a widening circle. The drums keep time with my heartbeat. I spin until I'm paired once again with Enzo. He smiles at me from behind his mask. I want to reach up and touch his face, then I remember that I'm disguised as his consort, and such a gesture wouldn't be strange. So I do. I laugh, draw closer to him, and brush his cheek with my hand. It might be my imagination, but his eyes soften at my touch. He doesn't stop me. He's just playing along. I don't mind. It takes me a moment to realize that the dance has ended. Around us, the others all give their dancing partners a quick kiss, the gesture of harmony between love and prosperity. Laughter and whistles go up from the crowd, all part of the custom. I glance at Enzo, suddenly shy. Am I love or am I prosperity? He smiles, draws me close, and leans down. The elaborately carved grooves of his mask brush against my skin, and I wonder if it will leave a touch of glitter behind. I close my eye. A moment later, his lips touch my own. Only a touch. It must have been brief, probably a second, no more, but to me it seems like forever, like he let us stay this way for a beat longer than needed. The familiar bubbling of heat courses through me, the luxurious feeling of a hot bath on a cold night. I return his kiss, leaning into him, savoring his heat. Then it's over. I find myself looking into his eyes, and there I see thin lines of scarlet slashed within his irises, glowing. His lips are still very, very close. He steps away from me and guides us out of the dancing circle as a new song starts. We're now closer to the harbor than we were before, and a wooden railing separates us from the rocky pier near where the ships are waiting. Perfectly in position. I'm short of breath, still dizzy and giggling, and Enzo laughs along, his low velvet voice mixing with my higher one. I don't think I've ever heard him laugh before. It's a soothing sound, both tender and unsure, reminiscent of someone who used to laugh more. His arm stays wrapped securely around my waist. My lips tingle. Even if he's just trying to continue our disguise, he's doing an excellent job. The crowd thins as we near the point that overlooks the beach. Only a few scattered figures are out along the rocks and sand, admiring the trio of moons hanging suspended at the horizon. Several inquisitors stand guard at each of the piers that lead out to the six ships. Long shadows shroud the piers in darkness. My energy stirs restlessly. Almost time for my debut. I glance briefly up at the roofs of the closest buildings. I can't see anyone there, but I know that several daggers are lying in wait, watching us for the first signal. We head down to the piers. The lights from the festivities make way for the shadows cast by the buildings closest to shore, and I shiver as the cold night air surrounds us. Enzo pulls me close to whisper in my ear. I can feel his lips turned up into a small smile. "The first pier," he murmurs. "Watch for me." I giggle loudly in return as if he'd just whispered some romantic nothings in my ear. One of the inquisitors lounging along the first pier casts us a bored look and then turns away. We edge steadily closer to the pier, continuing our little charade of romance the entire way. At least, it seems to be a charade for Enzo. Far be it from me to complain, the laughs he coaxes out of me are real, and so is the flush on my cheeks. His hand is hot at my waist, the rivulets of warmth delicious on such a cool night. Finally, I stumble over a rock and fall, giggling, into his arms. We're on the far end of the pier now, and the two inquisitors guarding the pier are barely a few yards away. One of them holds up a gloved hand. "No one allowed past this point," he says, nodding in our direction.
Enzo gives them a disappointed sigh. He places a hand on the Inquisitor's shoulder. All pretense of lightheartedness vanishes from his face. In the blink of an eye, he is transformed from a smiling boy to a predator. The Inquisitor looks at Enzo's hand in surprise. But before he can brush it off, his eyes widen. He shoots Enzo a stricken look. Beside him, his partner's stance wavers. "Are you all right?" he asks the first Inquisitor. He draws his sword, but before he can do anything else, the sword unravels right before his horrified eyes. It reappears a dozen yards away, falling uselessly to the sand. Mikhail is here in the darkness. Enzo touches his other hand to the second Inquisitor's arm. Both of them open their mouths in silent screams. He's melting them from the inside. Even knowing that this was the plan, the sight catches me off guard. I look on in horror as their faces turn red and contort in agony. Blood leaks from one's mouth. They shudder. "Now," Enzo whispers to me. I reach within and pull on my energy right as the two Inquisitors' knees buckle, sending them collapsing to the pier's deck. All around us, I conjure a vision of an empty pier. Planks of wood appear over where the Inquisitors lie. And Enzo and I both disappear behind an illusion of waves and night air, rendering both us and the dead men invisible. The darkness and unease in me soars, thrilling my heart, and I embrace the ecstasy. On top of this illusion, I weave an image of two white-cloaked Inquisitors standing as if nothing had happened. Up close, it's easy to tell that the two fake Inquisitors are nothing more than smoke and air. Their face is too simple to be real. But from the point of view of anyone who might look in this direction from afar, it's a convincing cover. The whole scene looks as if we were never here, as if I'm not standing in front of two corpses. Such power. I swirl in the midst of it all, my jaw clenched, my lips curving into a triumphant smile, even as another part of me recoils at what we just did. I feel numb, in control and yet completely helpless. Through my invisibility shield, I sense Enzo give me a single nod. I nod back, letting him know that I'm ready. He leaps down from the pier. Fire erupts from both of his hands. He holds them out, and in the shadows, I see a masked figure that must be Mikhail lift his arms. He unravels Enzo's flames, then reforms them far down the pier onto the deck of the first ship near its crates of fireworks. The two vanish into darkness. Seconds later, I hear the sound of startled shouts from the ship. My hands tremble. Flashbacks of the night when I killed my father come rushing back to me, clouding my illusions. Suddenly, my father's ghost smiles at me in my thoughts. I think I can even see him standing on the pier. "You're a murderer, Adelina. Nice to see you coming into your own." Seeing him disrupts my concentration. The shroud I'd put over the two dead Inquisitors at my feet suddenly vanishes, revealing them to the world. I start running to the second pier. My mind is completely numb. The image of the dead men is seared into my vision. "Keep going. You can't afford to stop." My attention turns to the buildings lining the harbor and to the other Inquisitors patrolling the other five piers. Taking a deep breath, I call forth more of my energy. The threads pull taut in my mind, protesting. I force them to bend, then to weave together. Against the walls of the buildings, silhouettes of people run by. Illusions of dark blue hoods. Suddenly, daggers seem to be everywhere on the piers. Inquisitors on the other piers raise the alarm. I conjure daggers all around them, then run toward the second pier. My fear heightens, and as it does, so do the illusions closest to me. Inquisitors call for help as they strike out against my phantom daggers. I reach the second pier, under cover of invisibility, just as flames ignite on board the second ship. "They're all fake!" one of the Inquisitors cries as his sword slashes straight through one of my illusions. He calls on the other soldiers to stop, but they're all too distracted, blinded with fear from my apparitions.
Stop! Find the culprit who's...
He never finishes his sentence. One of the daggers lunges for him with the speed of a striking viper. He twists the man's arm around and stabs him straight through his chest with his own sword.